So like Jill shared, I have a little guy who's almost six, and so I did the same where I started MOPS while I was pregnant and got to venture into motherhood, and I actually grew up being a MOPette. And so within my MOPS group in Irvine, I think that I was the first one where like I had been a MOPette and then I was a MOPS mom, and at that same time my mom was a mentor mom. So it was a really fun full circle time for us, and in that I just grew to have such a love for this ministry. And I remember hearing my mom talk over the years about being a mentor mom before I was a mom. And she would share about how she didn't really know if she felt like she was providing value being there, that motherhood was so different now and people just were doing things like baby wearing, and she's like, I don't even know what that is, and it's all this rage. And I kept hearing that from her and thinking, well, I'm sure that, you know, her presence is, you know, needed, and I'm glad that she's in it. But once I was a MOPS mom and I got to experience that of having this table of women that I could share life with, but then having my mentor mom there, I just have this passion for mentor moms now. So those of you in the room that are in that role, thank you for what you invest in these women. One mentor mom of mine in the years, I got to have her for 3 years because our table of women went through really, really hard stuff. And they let us kind of stay together through those years where we had marriages that were ending. One of our MOPS moms passed away. Another one has two children that are just with disease and on the verge of death, and lots of hard things. And that mentor mom of ours just was this presence of truth and didn't overspeak wisdom, but was there for us to come to. And we literally would just show up at her doorstep when we needed to and knock, and she'd be there and we could come in and spend time with her. So whatever your relationship looks like with your mentor mom here through MOPS, or if you need a relationship like that, there are so many women, hopefully in this church or maybe in other areas of your community, that you can reach out and find that mom that isn't your mom, but another mom that's ahead of you that can mentor you through. I encourage you to really dive into that. So that's not at all what I'm here to talk about, but I always have to give a shout out to the mentor moms, because really that has a lot to do with my passion for MOPS as an organization. I have spent the last 6 years of my career as a financial advisor with Thrivent, which is the parent company to Bright Peak. So that Bright Peak name might sound familiar to you as one of the key sponsors of MOPS International. And Thrivent is a Christian financial services organization. And so their mission is to serve clients who resonate with the message of creating this connection between your faith and your finances. And so I spent 6 years working with clients on their budget and financial plan and buying life insurance and managing their investments. And I absolutely love the company. I love what I did. But my biggest regret over those 5 years was how little time I gave to my son. I was in a very difficult marriage, and it was, in a way, an escape for me to just pour into my clients' lives for a company that was really wonderful. But in that, I was not being the mom that I felt like I was being called to be. So in this last April, I kind of hit a wall. And I was begging to the Lord, I love what I'm doing, but I feel like I need to make a shift, and I have no idea what that should be. And in being before Him in prayer and asking others to surround me in prayer in that decision, I felt like He was saying, well, what organization would you want to go serve? And so I throw out to Him kind of as a joke, how about MOPS? That would be awesome. That's, you know, an organization that I love. But how would they ever employ me from California? They're in Denver. But like, okay, I'll look. And so I go online, and there's this job description that literally is describing Danica. It kind of blew me away. And so long story short, now I get to do fundraising for MOPS full time. And we are headed into a season where we are venturing into these new frontiers to reach moms that can't be part of groups like this. So whether it's because there isn't one close to them, or they work full time, or they're intimidated because it is within the walls of a church, or maybe they just, you know, whatever roadblocks you can think of, we're venturing into and starting new programs so that we can better serve moms all over the world. And so we're on this mission to reach 1 million moms 5 years from now. And so I get to talk to different people all day, every day, about what we're doing and what we need in order to equip our program leaders in venturing into these new frontiers. So, as we dive into our topic today of creating a healthy relationship with money, I kind of tell you and tee up some of this of my story and my passion for what I'm doing now, because it really is this testimony of God using my relationship in the past and using my work in terms of helping people make financial decisions to tee me up for what I'm doing now. And in that transition that I had in April of going, okay, God, what am I gonna do? What do you have for me next? To be able to see the layers of the story that he has been building to equip me for this next step, and who knows what will be next after that, I encourage you to just be prayerful, to trust God with what he has ahead for you, that he has things ahead for you that are beyond what you could dream for yourself. And most of the time, all he's asking is for you to just take that next best step. So we'll talk more about that. I have a question that I want to ask you and shout out your answer, whatever it may be. If a $5 bill appeared in your pocket every morning, what would you do with it? Coffee? Other answers? Save it. I heard save it. Nothing else? No big ideas? No matter what room I'm in, like whether I am speaking to a group of CEO men who, you know, are in the room in their ties, or I'm speaking to moms with their yoga pants on, the answer that always gets shout out first is coffee. Every time. Usually they say Starbucks, and then I have to ramble on about how Starbucks has, you know, so captured our attention, even mine. So as we go through our time together, keep thinking about that question of $5 a day. What impact could that make? Or what would you do with it? Or given the life stage you're in, how would you use that $5 a day? So as we think about creating a healthy relationship with money, those really aren't words you hear together very often. But I love the parallels that we can draw between a relationship with, like, a spouse and a relationship with money. That relationship with that person might be really impacted by something tragic that has happened in the past. Or maybe that relationship is really deeply wounded because of your perception or thoughts around where is this relationship going. So my relationship with money might feel really unhealthy because I have no idea where I'm headed or what I'm going to do next in terms of my financial life. And also with a relationship with the human, there are a ton of books and Pinterest boards and counselors and apps that we can get on our phone to help us create a healthier relationship, say, for example, with a spouse. And same thing with money. There are a lot of books and apps and tools and Pinterest boards to help us with our financial decisions. But if we think of it in terms of a relationship, before we can remake our habits with money or with a relationship with a human, we need to remake our heart. we need to dive into the why of why is my relationship at the status that it is. We need to have that DTR, the determine the relationship talk, and figure out what is that deep reason of why I'm at where I'm at. So back when I was working directly with clients at Thrivent and helping them kind of diagnose and do that DTR, I would take them through this exercise that we call the 5S journey. And so that's where we're going to start in the five arrows that you see on your page. So I'm going to give you five words to fill in there, and then we'll go back and dive in a little bit deeper. The first one is surviving. The next is struggling. The third S word is stable. The fourth is secure. And the last one is surplus. So this book I have in front of me is called Your New Money Mindset, Create a Healthy Relationship with Money. And this was written by my CEO from Thrivent when I was at that company. And it is this journey into thinking through your relationship with money and how to create a new mindset. And so in writing this book, we did a ton of research across the United States with Christians and their mindset about money, and took them through different exercises and kind of screenings, and came up with these 5S words that we could categorize people in. So based on how they answered questions, we put this label over them. So I'm going to read to you our definition and some findings about each of these people groups. And before I get started, I want you to just quickly, instinctively look at, okay, these five words, I'd place myself here, make a little dot maybe. And then also think about, if you're married, where would my spouse answer that we fall? A lot of times you'll end up answering differently. All right, so the first one, surviving, we defined as feeling drained, trapped with little sense of hope. People who are surviving worry about meeting their basic needs of life, and every bit of what they earn goes to daily survival. Most in this group require financial assistance or a helping hand to get by. This group accounts for 6% of Christians in the United States. The next one, struggling, we defined as feeling strapped in the present and anxious about the future. Money causes most of the stress felt by those who are struggling. As financial pressures build, relationships with families, friends, and communities often begin to crack. Strugglers live paycheck to paycheck, or worse, slowly dig themselves deeper into debt. This group accounts for 11% of U.S. Christians. Until recently, it was the fastest growing segment. I always like to pause there and highlight that, because I get so excited when I hear about and see that trend away from struggling and into stable, and that it's no longer the fastest growing segment. And I believe that it is because there are so many great ministries out there that churches are helping highlight and facilitate, with like the Financial Freedom and Crown Ministries. And there's just so much happening there. I love that we're moving along. And now my prayer is that we see more of a shift into that surplus mentality, and we'll dig into why a little bit here. So the next S, stable, we defined as feeling okay, experiencing relative calm, but hoping for more. The stress level of the stable might be a bit lower, but they don't yet feel secure. They don't plan much for the future and likely aren't as generous as they want to be. They describe themselves as just making ends meet. And while this group doesn't live paycheck to paycheck, they are one disaster away from real hardship. This group accounts for 32% of U.S. Christians. Next was secure, and we defined that as feeling mostly confident. Those in the group we call secure feel they have enough for themselves, but probably not enough extra to share generously. As their income grows, so do lifestyle expenses. So they perpetually just have just enough with only a little extra. although having a financial strategy might increase their sense of security, these people can be as enslaved to saving as strugglers are to debt. This group encompasses 38% of U.S. Christians. And then lastly, surplus, feeling grateful and ready to share. Members of the surplus group believe they have more than enough. They don't constantly long for more. They display a high level of contentment, even if their lifestyle is average or below. Their purchases match their needs, not their income. And because they feel grateful, they are ready to share. Most joyfully give away more than 10% of their gross income. Only 13% of U.S. Christians feel they live in surplus. So as you think about those five S's, that 5S journey, we call it a journey because your answer of where you fall might be very different tomorrow based on what's going on. It really isn't a prescriptive word. We're looking at what our mindset is, and tangible things that happen in our life can really shift where we are at. And I don't know if you noticed, but the common thing that placed someone in that surplus mentality had nothing to do with how much was in their bank account. It didn't have anything to do with where they fell in terms of tax brackets. It was this mindset that they had kind of gone through a process to define what is there enough. And since they had done that, they had this freedom to give, and they were ready to share beyond what they had defined as their enough. So that enough looks different for every person. And as we get into the next section, you'll see that advice that we give or coaching that we give of what someone should or shouldn't do in different categories of their financial life is going to be different for every person along this journey. But my hope would be that we would all want to strive for that surplus mentality. If we're Christians and we believe that, you know, everything that we have is the Lord's and we want to be good stewards of that, we definitely should be defining our mindset based on that surplus mentality. And in that surplus mentality, when we have this grateful spirit, our hope is that then our kids are, we're rubbing off on our kids in that way too. If you were to ask me to look back at, you know, my childhood and how I was raised, and maybe as like a 12-year-old ask me to place myself on this 5S journey, I would have said struggling. Yet the reality, I was being raised by a family that I'm being raised in Irvine with a stay-at-home mom and a dad who's like a director of finance. Like we were not struggling. But because of the language that my parents used raising me, that, oh, that's too expensive, or we don't have enough, or, you know, that type of language as a reaction to everything that we talked about, I had this mentality that we were struggling and we were poor. And so now being a parent, I catch myself in the language that I'm using. And so I try and shift that to where I am speaking gratitude and speaking generosity and helping my son not necessarily think through like the logistics of why we do or don't spend money on different things, but help plant seeds of ideas of different things that we do with our money and what God has given us. It's really hard for me. I am a sucker for the dollar bin at Target, and now my son is too. But I tried just as an experiment, and I love giving the idea because people, you know, it's something tangible that comes up as a reminder of when we walk into Target and the temptation is there to get the things out of the dollar bin that end up costing you three or five, right? You think it's part of the dollar bin, and then it ends up being more. To pause and say, all right, buddy, we've got a choice that, you know, I will let you, you know, pick out something for a dollar, and that can be your choice. Or we could set aside that dollar and let's go buy something that we can give to that man that we saw on the street, you know, in Costa Mesa. Or let's put that dollar aside and then we're going to buy some canned goods and take them over to Families Forward where grandma volunteers. Like, just start giving him ideas and choices of he could choose to be generous in that moment or choose to still, get something for himself. But it creates some good conversation, and I love placing things in my day that are tangible examples of being able to have that conversation about generosity. So we're all on this journey. We're trying to get to that surplus mentality. And while what we have can affect our money mindset, the amount is not as significant as what we do with what we have. So an example of this that my previous business partner loves to tell is when her dad was teaching her how to balance her checkbook. And the parallel now is a little bit different because most of us aren't writing checks and keeping track of it that way. But think of it in terms of if somebody found your mint.com, login where it's pulling in all your transactions. For her, it was looking at her checkbook register. And he asked her, if somebody found this record of how you're spending your money, would you be proud of the person that they described? So if they were given this series of transactions and asked, describe the person that owns this account, how would you feel about the way that they probably were describing them? And at that time in her life, she said that they probably would have thought I was an investor in Nordstrom's because of how much money she spent there. But now, if you were to look at her bank account and if you were asked to describe the type of person that she is, you would clearly say that she is somebody that cares about the well-being and the salvation of people all over the world because of how much she gives away. She gets to travel the country speaking and coaching other financial planners, and she always starts her talk with, I am on a mission to make as much money as I can. And they're all like, oh my gosh, who is this lady? But she quickly follows it up with, because I love to give it away. And she's living that out. And it is an amazing thing to see how free and grateful and joy-filled of people that we can be when we are all about giving back to causes that we care about. That it's not out of just, oh, I have to give to this, I have to give to that. When you find things that you feel like, gosh, God put it on my heart to further this cause, it is an amazing thing to give in that way. So we want to be conscious of what we do with what we have, but we have to balance that out with being good stewards and having responsibilities and families to take care of. So a lot of times what we find is that we end up feeling frozen and that we can't do anything, and we end up not doing anything productive for our financial life, and we don't do anything generous with what we have because we just have competing goals and don't know what to do next. So this next piece that we're going to go through are five financial principles that Thrivent defined, and they're basic. You'd find it, pretty much from any, Christian perspective of how to manage your finances. And what I'm hoping that you come away with is maybe in each of these five categories, you identify one small next step. When we start talking about retirement and that feels so far away and you're going, I'm just trying to figure out how to best get dressed in the morning without pulling my hair out. How am I supposed to think about retirement? I want you to just slow down and think of, okay, well, what's one small next best step? So let's dive into these principles. The first one on the left side is give back. I put that first because it goes back to what we're talking about in having that surplus mentality. That whether it is something small that you're doing to just give back out of what you have, meaning go take a bunch of stuff to Goodwill or go serve with your time, or maybe it means that you're starting to make more financial donations somewhere. When we do that first, it's this act of surrender and simplifying and giving back to the Lord what is His already. And whether you're a Christian or not, we see examples of this popping up in culture, and I love it, where businesses are recognizing the value and the deep impact that can be made when they're choosing to give back. And so more and more companies are identifying, hey, what's something close to our heart that we can tie our business to and give back? Let's do the same in our families. Let's figure out as a family, what things really get us excited, or what things do we really feel compelled to give back to? I'm thinking about in a couple of weeks when you get together as groups to share your life stories that might have some similar ties of maybe part of that time is that you as a group are brainstorming, hey, this is something that has been hard for us to go through. In what ways can we use that story to give back to others that are hurting in that way? So think of something, doesn't have to be right now that you think of it, but think of one thing in that give back category that you can do as one small next best step. The next principle is spend less than you make, or spend less than you earn. Seems pretty simple, but statistically in the United States, we're spending $1.03 for every dollar that we make. And that's not including us setting aside money to save or do other, you know, responsible things. We are spending a lot more than we're making. And maybe your one simple next best step is just to rein in your budget on one category. Maybe don't tackle the whole thing, but figure out one category that you can spend less. Some of you might be in a place where you have no idea what your household is even bringing in, and so it's hard for you to manage decisions on a daily basis. And so I would encourage you to figure out what's the best way that you can better manage that spending. It might just be that you need to have a conversation with your spouse to say, hey, I just need a little bit more insight into what our picture is so that I can help us, you know, make better decisions. Or maybe it's coming up with what app is going to be the best one for you to use to manage your budget. Maybe you need to dive into a relationship where you've got like a coach that's helping you through your budgeting process because you're not a numbers person and it's overwhelming. But just getting to that point of knowing that you're spending less than you earn is a goal to set out to do. The next principle is be wise with debt. That's going to look different for everybody in the room, depending on what your work and business and home life is like. But identifying what's one small next best thing I can do to get out of debt, because we all know that debt is not good to carry. The fourth principle is protect yourself against setbacks. And this one's loaded. There's a lot in there. This has to do with making sure that you have the right amount of emergency savings. And so maybe your next best step is to take a step towards building up that emergency savings. Maybe protecting yourself against setbacks, and the next best thing you can do is sit down and write your will and put guardianship documents into place. Or maybe you need a trust. Thinking through those legal implications of setbacks that can happen. Making sure you have the right insurance, whether that's life insurance, car insurance, disability insurance, health insurance. There's so much that we can do to protect our families in the event of something tragic happening. And I have way too many stories of where we waited too long to put into place those protection pieces, and then it was just too late for us to get any help. Lastly, the fifth financial principle here to think through of what your next best step could be is having a short and long-term goal, or a short and long-term plan. So whether you make a date with yourself or with your spouse, I encourage you to kind of get away and think through in the next 6 months, in the next 2 years, in the next 5 years, what are some things that I want to see happen for our family? And then what financial pieces need to be in order to implement those visions that you have for those different time increments in our life and write them down. That's the thing around having a financial plan.